Greetings, everybody. This is Beth from Galactic Roundtable. How are you tonight? Welcome. I'm so glad to have you here. We are going to be launching the Congressional Hearing Initiative, all of us helping the Paradigm Research Group. We will be tweeting Congress when that happens. That's going to be coming up in a couple of weeks, so stay tuned. The date is not set yet. There have been delays, and everything is in divine order, and all is rolling out as it should. There are many, many, many cards in play. There's lots of things involved in getting this done the right way, and we have to have the precise right timing. And so I would say that CHI is the last is letting the last card in the House of Cards fall. So we're just waiting for our turn to be a part of the process. If you haven't done so already, I hope you'll secure a free Twitter account so you'll be ready to do this with us. So I have some new information coming out that is about disclosure and about, what happened with how the galactics and extraterrestrials have been involved with our government in the last 100 years. And so this is a very intricate, involved story. So there's a little background information that needs to be learned. Today I found the best testimony I've ever heard on this subject. So I'd like to share that presentation with you tonight. I'd like to give you a little background information. I would be surprised if many of you have heard this before. So I'm very excited about this. And then in the next, by the end of the week, I'll be coming out with a new article, and I think it will cause, light bulbs to go on all over. It certainly has for me. So this is the story about the time-traveling adept extraterrestrial who we know as Adolf Hitler, and how he came to rise, how he had help from the extraterrestrials, and how the most important part of this story is how the Third Reich continued into the Fourth Reich, and they stopped waging their war on land and sea, and they started waging their war with the laws. They created the European Union, and they did that on purpose to destroy it and watch it implode. And this all leads up to the story about the Stargates. It's a very long story. So I'm sharing one of the most important parts of it with you tonight. This is an interview with Al Bielek, and this guy. I listened to this interview to make sure that the information was right on, and there's nothing that he is saying tonight that wasn't shared by the King of Swords to us. So I believe everything he's saying is right on. So you may or may not have heard of him before, but I hope you'll enjoy this presentation. And next week, I will have the new written piece, and we'll go over it bit by bit. So this recording is a little bit of an echo, but the information is so good I decided it's worth it, and I can't find an alternate. So I'm going to start this in the middle. I hope you enjoy this. Thank you.
My brains back in the 30s. After the stress and the trauma of World War II, the stress and the trauma on the civilian population, even though we never were subjected to any bombing, or that what went on in Europe. The trauma was still here in the sense that people had to work extra hours, long hours, and there was some concern at that time, as I lived through it, of people wondering whether we would ever be hit, whether we were going to win the war or not. Not until about late 44 and early 45 did it appear certain we would win the war. Up until late 44, it was still not certain. And for that matter, in the eyes of the Allies, they weren't really sure either, because even in the Battle of the Bulge, the Germans came close to winning that one. They had a lot of reserves we didn't give credit for. They had a vast amount of expertise, and they had secret weapons, which they made one mistake after the other. And some of my research has shown one of the Americans who went over to Germany to help them with their, forgotten the German name for the flying saucer, but the various types of flying saucer they had, an American who gained the trust of the Germans and actually what appear was working against the Germans by giving them the wrong advice, delayed that program long enough that they were never able to bring enough of those into bearing on the war to shift the, shall we say, the balance of the war. There was a lot of bad decisions. Some of them were just plain bad decisions in terms of the German high command. Some of them were the worst decisions came out of Hitler after 1943. And he quite literally lost the war for them, hands down. They lost it militarily. But there's a lot of evidence now that they didn't really lose the war in the terms of the political sense.
Well, this is a little off subject here, but I've read somewhere that the Germans did have alien technology. Apparently there was a downed craft. I believe it was a Palladian craft that they got their hands on.
Yes.
Do you have any direct knowledge of this, or is it just through your research that you found out?
The information I was given was that the Palladians, that is, deliberately crashed a vehicle in the Bavarian Mountains in late 1935 to give them the technology, and also apparently enough gold to bail out the Reichsbank, because they... And this was, when I say the Palladians, this was a very specific group of them, the Aldebaran group.
Right, there's several.
There's five basic, seven sisters planet, they call it, with seven star systems, all part of the Palladians. There's seven planetary systems, and four or five of them are part of the council, and the Aldebaran group is one of these, what should we call it, a splitter group. They're almost outlaws, not truly outlaws, but they do not heed follow any of the rulings of the General Council, and they do things on their own. And they were concerned because they had helped engineer some of the Aryan groups, and Hitler was saying that he was all for the Aryans, and they bought that, and they were concerned with this, and they were able to time travel, and they saw that Hitler was going to be losing the war. And they were concerned about preserving the Aryan stock, so they offered to help Hitler. Certain conditions went with it. This is one of the interesting aspects of it, because I got wind of this and got the information. And literally, the information came from the horse's mouth.
Which horse?
The Palladians.
Oh, that you got?
Yes.
Okay.
And they made an agreement. They tried to make an agreement with Roosevelt. Roosevelt wouldn't have it. And they said at that point they realized, because they would not, Roosevelt would not work with them, realized it was going to be World War II. Because if Hitler had not come to the PowerPoint, which he did, because of the aid he got, and Roosevelt had accepted the help of the Palladians to get out of the Depression, which part of was concerned, their concern was, that Roosevelt abjure war, in other words, will follow a peaceful course and not get involved in Europe. They could have avoided World War II. That was what the Palladians' basis of thinking was at that time, as I understand it. I have to say, as I understand it.
Yeah, that's true, and I'm sure we're going to get into that as we talk about the Montauk Project. But what do you think that the negative side for us would have been had we made those agreements?
That's a very good question. Certain things happened. And this is, of course, looking at the overall spectrum, which you can do now much better than you could, let's say, in 1940 or 35 even. Hitler was given help. His rise to power came in 1933, but his meteoric rise of the Wehrmacht, of the German war machine, was unbelievable between 1935 and 1939. He rearmed Germany and became the power of Europe, in fact, the power of the world.
Almost
in the
overnight.
Power of 5 years.
Yeah.
Overnight.
Unbelievable.
It was unbelievable. He had outside help. Obviously, he had financial help in order to pay everybody. He also used the financial trick under Schacht, who was the head of the Reichsbank, of doing what we had done originally in the U.S. Constitution, when he was issued by the government, not by the banks. The banks will charge you interest.
Okay, everybody, so listen up. He just said that the extraterrestrials noticed that Eisenhower wasn't going to cooperate with them, that he planned on going to war. Had had he been willing to stay out of World War II, things would have been very, very different. So since Eisenhower wasn't going to keep peace on Earth, then they went to help Hitler, and they said, "We will help you with conditions." Then Al said, "It's obvious because Hitler rose to power so quickly that he had help, and we all know that the help he had was Preston Bush, and that came from J.P. Morgan Company, and they let Hitler have the funds to bribe and buy out everybody in Germany. And, you know, they gave the factories the money to build their war machine. So, you know, the common people in Germany at the time, they all had factory jobs. Their families were being fed. They were happy. They had money to buy a car. You know, things were going good. So they went along with the program and they got hoodwinked. When I do my write-up, I'm going to fill in all the details of what he's saying, but it's going to be showing how the extraterrestrials worked in human history in the last 100 years to mold what we are now calling the truth embargo. So I'm going to write a very elaborate write-up about this. Keep listening. This is pretty good stuff.
Eventually they'll bury you. But he did the same thing in Germany, instituted constitutional money under the German constitution by the banks being.
Listen, I'm sorry to interrupt that again. I just want to say this is where the war reparations come from for Nisara. Everybody says, well, why do we need Nisara? Why do we need a divine government? Why are we all getting $10 million? This is the reason why. This started with Preston Bush and J.P. Morgan, and they're the ones that the settlement, you know, which became Nisara law, was written for, to make up for everything they've taken away from us. They did everything illegally, and that's being cured with Nisara law. That's why disclosure and announcements and the enactment of Nisara law all have to come together at the same time, and that's what I'll be writing up. So look for that later. Enjoy this.
But out of the picture, in part. I don't think they cut them out totally.
Our Federal Reserve would not like that, by the way.
Well, we're not part of the Federal Reserve system. But he had the German government issue the money to pay for the war machine, to pay for the armaments he had ordered and so forth, and the whole thing went together very well. The German people were totally in back of Hitler. There were, of course, a few dissidents, and the dissidents eventually went to the camps. Now, one of the things which the Palladians extracted from him as an agreement for their help was, he says, we know you have a Jewish problem, but there will be no Rostov, there will be no harsh handling of the Jewish situation. It will be handled discreetly, calmly, and with kid gloves. He agreed to this, and so did the man who was the head of the SS.
Is that Himmler?
Himmler. Himmler and Hitler both agreed to this, as well as the other top people. There was no hatred against the Jews in 1935, 36. They were inviting them to leave. And large numbers did leave Germany between 1933 and 1939, roughly 1 million, because the German population of Jewish people dropped from 1.55 million in 1933 to 0.55 million in 1939, those records coming out of the World Almanacs for the various years. So the official records show that the Germans were encouraged to leave, and they did, and they took their money and their possessions with them up to 1939.
You mean the German Jews?
The German Jews. After that, it changed. Now, in 1941...
What was the other part of the agreement, by the way?
The other part of the agreement was that they wanted to see the Aryan people survive, which was why they were giving them help. Of course, Hitler, in terms of the German people, was claiming most of the German people were of Aryan stock. And he was to preserve them and to make them a whole nation again, and essentially a whole civilization.
But was Hitler even an Aryan himself?
No, he was not. Hitler was Jewish, believe it or not.
I've come across that a time or two.
Oh, yes.
His mother, I believe, was Jewish.
His mother was Jewish, and his true father, his official name was Adolf Schickelgruber. That was his father's name. His true father was fully Jewish. I was a Rothschild. His mother apparently used to
do little chores and so forth for the Rothschilds, as many people in Germany did at the time, or the wealthy families. You go there, you do house chores, and you're paid for it. And the Rothschilds were known to play around, and I guess his mother must have been in line with one of the Rothschilds, and the rest of the story was that, of course, Adolf was born out of that illegal wedlock, if you will.
Have you ever been able to corroborate that with anybody? Or is that just some research?
That's some of the research I've done. It is corroborated by some researchers, but I don't think there's any way of corroborating that on a hard, cold, factual basis.
There's not much about his parents.
Very little.
Yeah, there's just the sort of the assumption out there that they may have been Jewish, but
I've heard this and had it confirmed. Hitler was a Rothschild Jew, and this is the lineage of Angela Merkel and Hillary Clinton. They're both Rothschild Jews. This has always been true.
Why this keen desire on his part to keep the Aryan race strong?
He did a great deal of research, speaking of Adolf, he did a great deal of research in his early days. He used to live in flop houses and other places while his mother, he was growing up. His mother kept care of him part of the time, and then he'd go out on his own. He did a lot of research during that period of time in the University Library of Vienna. And he never went to the university, as far as I know. But eventually, when his mother died, he came into inheritance, and he sort of cleaned up his act and dressed up properly and shaved off his beard. And then he became involved in some of the metaphysical research societies. And one of them ran him through a ritual, which was basically an opening to him of certain of the metaphysical aspects. He became, through peyote, a certified black master in 1913 or 1914 in one of the metaphysical societies. And he was accepted as being part of the black art side of it at that time. Came World War I, he volunteered for the service, and he became a courier on the front line. This is verified history and verifiable. And he took the job, which had a typical life expectancy of 2 weeks. He lasted throughout the entire war as a courier.
How'd he do that?
That's what a lot of people want to know. He was injured slightly once. That's the only time in his entire life he was ever injured. Every attempt on his life made in the later days when he was Adolf Hitler.
So Adolf Hitler had a history of having adept abilities that were using dark magic and were Tibetan in origin. So these are Buddhist, these are gifts that the Buddhists are aware of. And if you read the Vedas, there's cases of this all over the place. These adept masters who are practicing in the dark arts can do these things. And Hitler knew exactly what he was doing. He brought this knowledge from the future because he traveled back in time.
And Germany failed. He would leave before the bombs went off. Whatever else happened, the bombs refused to go off. They could never hit him.
You think that had something to do with his black magic?
He was accepted as a black master. He also had his connections with Tibet, with the Black Hat group in Tibet. He had connections there through not only himself, but through the SS organization. They had their own little, shall we say, black arts group or society. There was various connections which have been researched by various people. One of the researchers was a man that wrote the one of the principal books on Hitler's life, The Spear of Destiny. I think it was Jim or James Ravenscroft, who went through the whole metaphysical history of Hitler. He got all the information straight out of Hitler's mouth. When Hitler was before the war, basically.
Well, I thought before the war he was interested in art and actually applied to
art. Yes, he was.
He
was an artist also.
And got rejected, and that's the reason why he turned out so bad.
Well, that's one of the theories. He did do a lot of paintings. He was not officially accepted. He tried to get him into Vienna and the art groups there, and they rejected him. I've seen some of the pictures of some of his artwork that survived. I don't know whether the actual artwork has survived or not, but many photos were made of his artwork. Actually, he wasn't a half bad artist. I've seen much worse. I won't say I've seen much better, of course. But he was an artist of some note, and he liked to do his own paintings. This was in the early days before he got into the political movement. Now, how he got into the political movement, I think, is open to a lot of grabs in terms of what is the real history. Somehow he became involved with his own group, cronies, the brown shirts. Then they had, of course, the financial collapse of Germany in 1923, where they took a wheelbarrow full of money to buy a loaf of bread. That was deliberately engineered. Then he had Germany so weak they were going to try and get the communists to take over. He had no connection with the communists other than he was totally against the communist movement. And that was the political basis on which he started his career, saying Germany should be for Germany or keep the communists out. And he promised us the German people. And they backed him because of this. And he didn't keep the communists out because they were close to taking over power also in Germany around 1928-29.
Sounds like he was just a brilliant man who knew how to take advantage of everything that was in front of him.
He was a very brilliant man in terms
until
of...
Until the end, of course, when he became
Well, he went off the deep end at some point, but before that, he was a very brilliant man. He was an astute politician, if you will, in the sense of being aware of political history. And he saw, apparently, the history that should have been Germany's, not only from the standpoint of World War I and the way Germany was dealt very badly at the peace table, but also the fact...
I really don't think Hitler was an astute, brilliant man. What I think is that he had inside knowledge because he came back to Earth from the future and he had already seen how everything had played out. And he knew exactly what had happened in history and why. And he was able to look in to the finer details of who was backing who and where the money was coming from. That made him astute.
The Germany and the German race. He got into the whole Wehrmacht thing. He got into the Wagner thing and Wagner's ideas, which were expressed in music. And he realized and believed that Germany should have a place in the sun and a place in the future. And then it became his battle cry.
Sure did. And do you think he knew he was Jewish?
Of course he knew what he was. But
the thing we have to do with the programming that has been laid down on us in the Matrix, you know, in high school history and all that jazz, is that we have to move our consciousness away from, you know, who invaded who and why they did it and all that stuff. And we have to go galactic with our understanding. And we have to learn that Hitler was doing this to control the stargates. That's where the conversation has to start. We have to understand the importance of the stargates. And that's why I put that book out for free on the internet to read, for anyone to read, because it's more important for people to have knowledge than it is to sell books. So if you haven't read it yet, I urge you to read it. It's called Stargate Earth. It's a website, stargateearth.org. The entire book is there. All you have to do is sit with your pad and read it. That's what this story is about. It's not about World War II. But now we have to integrate the whole story and how the galactics played a role. That's what we're doing next. That's what will raise consciousness to get us full galactic disclosure.
This was one of the aspects, you see, because of it, I believe, and I have to put this as my belief, because of his Jewish connections and what he knew of his connections with the Rothschilds and other Jewish groups, he took a great dislike to the way they were maneuvering the banks and so forth, and he saw them as a threat. He saw them as a threat to Germany. He saw them as a threat to the future of Germany. And one of the things he promised early on after he was fully in power, that is after the burning of the Reichstag, and he declared himself dictator. First he was the Reichschancellor, then he became dictator. And the German people bought it because he promised them everything. He delivered on his promises in the first few years up till 1939.
Now, do you think any of that had to do because of his black magic background or contact with aliens?
I think it had a great deal to do with his black arts background, plus he became involved with the aliens. Now, how he became involved with the aliens is a great mystery in itself. I do not know how that came about, other than the fact that he was approached. Now, why he was approached, by the Aldebaran group, but that I don't know, other than what I understand, that the Aldebarans were concerned about preserving the Aryan connection.
Okay, but you're saying that you did speak with a Palladian who gave you information about this relationship he had. Is that correct?
Yeah, I got information, both indirectly and directly. And he was contacted, and they made the deal with him. They would help him. And apparently they were not expecting him to go to war. You see, one of the things that's been lost in the history of World War II and is mistaught or misunderstood in both cases apply was that Hitler declared war on England. No, he did not. He said he would never declare war on England. He made that as a point of honor. He said, they are Aryan people. I will never declare war on them. See, Winston Churchill declared war on Germany.
Well, what about Poland and all
that? That was because of the Polish incident, because there was a secret alliance between England and Poland. Now, the story goes historically that Hitler attacked Poland, but they neglect to state the fact.
Okay, he's about to tell a very important story, but I want to interject here. And I want to say that the reason he says, I don't know how he got involved with the extraterrestrials. The point, whole point is that Adolf Hitler was an extraterrestrial. And they recognized him for who he was. Coming back from the future to this time, they contacted him. They never lost contact with him. Since he's an extraterrestrial. Now, okay, so why is he in a non-Aryan body? Why is he this Jewish guy doing these things? He knew the only way he would have success is by incarnating into the Rothschild family. So the agreement was made that the Rothschild father would, you know, bed down with his maid who was taking in his laundry, and they made this baby. And then the Rothschild dad never saw him again. But it gave him all the inside connections to the money, to the banks, and they knew who he was, and the extraterrestrials knew who he was. So we need to expand our hearts and expand our minds to a different story than what we were told.
A parent, and I have to say a parent because this is what the history says when you dig. Polish regulars crossed out of Poland into the corridor area of Germany and attacked German soldiers and a German outpost or something like this. And this, if true, was an act of war against the German nation. Of course, it became known immediately to Hitler, and Hitler sent his regulars in after them to chase them out of this area, and he crossed over into Poland. Now, this was considered by Poland an act of war on the part of Germany. They contacted England, and Winston Churchill took this as an excuse to declare war on Germany, which he did. Now, Germany, in retrospect, had to declare war on England because they had war declared on them.
What about France? And
they sided, of course, with England.
That's right.
The initial action was England declaring war on Germany because of the Polish incident, and then France immediately joined in with England. And then, of course, the thing was laid out from about 1 September, I think, was the attack by Hitler across the border into Poland.
Went quickly.
It went very quickly from
very
that point
quickly.
On.
Yeah, he was well ready, though. I mean, if you just look at, you know, the way his nation was configured, it was configured for war.
He was set for war.
No question about it.
He was set for war. There's no question about it.
Yeah, so he was expecting it. Okay, let's kind of get back a little bit. We one thing about this program is we take some interesting twists and turns.
Yes.
As one question leads to another question to another. Is there anything you want to?
Well, there's one thing I want to add. Yes.
Add, okay.
The Palladians pulled out of their backing in 1941, and they just withdrew. I've not been able to get a hardcore reason why. But it was also known that 1941, medically, Hitler was in sorry shape. It was stated by his doctors and by his historical reference that he developed a bad case of syphilis, possibly a terminal case of syphilis, and I didn't expect him to last much longer, but he did manage to last a lot longer, quite a few years, in fact, until 1993. How he got the syphilis cured, nobody knows. But it was also noted by...
Did you say until 1983?
93. He did not die in the bunkers.
That almost went right past me now.
He did not die in the bunkers. This is well documented and is coming out of secret records that are now being...
Hitler and his boys went down to Argentina, and he did live until 1993. They knew the inner earth portals. They got away. A lot of people knew him there.
Being released from the United States.
That he died in 1993.
That he did not die in the bunkers. They didn't say when he died in those records. Mm-hmm. They had a double. It was his driver who looked a great deal like him, and it was someone in the family. It could pass easily for Hitler.
So where did he actually move to then?
He went to South America first, Argentina. Then he went to Antarctica, where they had the bases already set up. Then eventually he went to the United States. He was in Portland, Oregon for a number of years. Then he moved after 1960 to Arizona, to one of the small communities up north of Phoenix, not Flagstaff, but Prescott. He was there until 1984.
As the guest of the United States government?
I'm not sure how it was arranged. I only know that he was there, and I know he was there because a friend of mine living upstate New York, who was one of his art dealer collectors during the war and after, had correspondence went on with Hitler twice a year. And he says up until 1984, he kept sending letters to Adolf in Prescott, Arizona, and they were returned. And that is not the letters, but an answer was given back to him by Adolf. In 1984, the correspondence ended. And he assumed that Adolf died in 1984. He didn't know. But other records I know of, and people who were in the CIA, said flat out they saw him in La Paz, Bolivia in 1989.
So did he enjoy a comfortable life, you think?
Apparently he enjoyed a comfortable life thereafter. There are many aspects of this one can speculate on. Why was he allowed to leave?
Yeah.
And why was he allowed to go to the U.S.? Why was he never treated as a war criminal? One would have to speculate and say he obviously, in the eyes of someone, was not a war criminal, i.e. he did the job that he was set up to do. This, of course, was going to tread on an awful lot of people's toes, but you have to look it back from history, as it were, and get away from the close perspective and get a more distant perspective and find out who benefited from World War II.
I'd say the bankers.
Exactly.
They
set it up. They wanted it.
Who benefited from World War II? Bush and Cheney and the crime families. They didn't care who won the war. They've waged us into how many wars? They don't care about the outcomes of the war or the millions of dead or the pain and the suffering. They just want their money.
We hadn't had a war since the World War I, so let's have another one. It turned out to be a bloody mess, but they made tons of money because they finance both sides, and they make money off of both sides. They don't care who wins or loses. They control it from behind the scenes.
But, you know, from their perspective, it'd be a lot easier to kill him than risk the chance of having someone see him and identify him.
Well, they did identify him in Portland, Oregon in 1960. They had his picture published in the newspaper.
Huh.
That's when he fled to Arizona.
See, well, so you actually just talked to people who say they have seen him, have known him,
yes,
in all these years. Well,
wow.
That's rather...
It's hard to explain.
It's going to be hard to
the bottom
prove
line
it
as to why they did what they did.
So in your mind, you feel there's a better than 50% chance that he actually lived to 93.
Yes. Now, the problem was, of course, after the war went on, I got to other people were involved in the side issues, the concentration camps, and all of that is a very sticky mess and a sticky wicket. And how many died in the camps, didn't die in the camps, I don't even want to get into it because it's a very, very sticky and controversial mess. There are claims and counterclaims. Everybody knows this. Everybody's read it.
It's just a lot of people, basically.
Yeah, a lot of people died in the camps without any question.
We know that many, many, many more millions than 6 million were killed in the concentration camps. We also know that 2.5 million United States soldiers have been killed if you combine the deaths from Iraq and Afghanistan. And we also know that 3 million have been killed, mainly civilians, in Afghanistan and Iraq combined. And this information is being blocked from us. I don't know if we knew how many millions were being killed on both sides, if we would, you know, stomp our foot a little bit louder and shake our fist on the table and tell them to stop, 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 stop. That's what disclosure is about. It brings world peace. This is what I think about night and day. We're ready for peace now. They've been lying to us a very long time.
We'll leave it that way. But why the hatred toward the Jews?
He felt that they were the ones, as I read it, he felt that they were the ones who were responsible for the problems of Germany in World War I, because historically the Kaiser was ready to call the war quits in 1916. He actually approached the English governor and says, look, you're losing the war. I don't want anything out of this. Let's just end the war, silly war here. I want no territorial encroachments or advancements. I don't want anything to be out of this. End the war, leave all the boundaries the way they are, and let's be friends, so to speak. Most of the German, most of the British government went along with this, because this was what the Kaiser of Germany said when he approached the English government. It was in a stalemate at that point in 1916. And everyone except the then Premier, Prime Minister of England, was willing to go along with it. He wasn't. Now, historically speaking, and of course he's going to step on some toes, but historically speaking, he had a lot of Jewish friends, and they told him, you don't have to do this. We can arrange for you and see to it that you will win the war. We'll get the United States in on your side in the war, and you'll win it against the Germans. Well, how do I do this? And says, just do what we tell you. And the first thing they did, of course, going through the United States to the then President Woodrow Wilson, in 1914, 1918, and a little beyond, of course, they had Woodrow Wilson, because he was beholden to certain interests in the U.S., who got the lawsuit off of his neck, having been a little bit too amorous as the president of Princeton University with one of the other people's wives that was held up, and he was being sued. The suit was paid, and they said, we'll fix it up for you, but you are beholden to us, and we want a favor out of you in the future. The favor was that you will appoint the first Jewish justice to the United States Supreme Court, which Chief Justice Brandeis in 1916. And you will also be looking for the time and the point where you will get the United States into war on the side of England against Germany. And, of course, the hue and cry was, remember the Lusitania, which was sunk in 1916, by the way, not 1917. In fact, it was a little earlier in 1916. But then there was another hue and cry about a ship being sunk in the Thames River, a boat which had a lot of American citizens on it. Well, this went to Congress. Congress declared war. And, of course, we came on the side of England. And, of course, we beat Germany. 6 months after this incident with the riverboat on the Thames occurred, it seems like it was still flying up and down on the Thames, and it was suddenly discovered that the ship had never been hit. The whole thing was a manufactured incident. What do you do? Say, whoops, we made a mistake. We're not in the war. You can hardly
do that point.
Not at that point, you don't. Hitler's view on this was...
Same thing happened in Vietnam. We got brought in on a false flag. None of it was true. Everybody threw up their arms and went into war. It would really be nice if we would end that thinking now. We were fooled by it just as recently as a few years ago. Maybe it's time we, dropped our programming from the Matrix and learned a different story.
Right or wrong, this was his view, that the Jews were involved in the background and controlled banking. The Rothschilds controlled all the banking in Europe. There were other Jewish, as well as non-Jewish bankers, and we're all Jewish, controlling the banking interests of Europe, of England, and so forth. And they arranged for the loss of World War I, and they were setting up Europe again for something. And, of course, they wanted Germany held down. That was his viewpoint, and he was against the whole Jewish cabal, the whole Jewish interest, and wanted all of the Jewish bankers out of Germany, and he got them all out.
Well, but I'm trying to tie this together with what you're saying, that he lived to 1993 because he did something right. Now,
In
somebody's view. So the question is, who's controlling the agenda here?
That is correct.
And do you think it could be someone beyond the bankers, the Rothschilds?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Go into that for a second.
You have another aspect here. Who do the bankers belong to? That is, in terms of their private organizations, all of the bankers have other groups they belong to. Today, of course, we know about such groups as the Bilderbergers, Council of Foreign Relations, Trilateral Commission, the Club of Rome, which is older than any of those, and the Illuminati, which goes back much further. They're all connected together, and they all have their own little agendas of what they want to do, the way they want to fight off Europe or control Europe or unify Europe. Today, they want to unify Europe. And they have a long-term plan. The long-term plan doesn't cover just 10 or 20 years. It's 50 to 100 years in advance. And they see what they want to do. And these people are not stupid, I must say. They are very intelligent. They're very high IQ. But they look at it their own way as to what they think. In their view, they are given the right to rule the world and rule Europe and eventually the world. They think they know what's best for everybody.
Where do they get this view from, though?
That's the good question there. The Council of the Illuminati, which is one of the top organizations, has some very strange members. I'm not familiar with all of them who are currently on there. In fact, I only know about two or three. But there is one interesting aspect, and this is verified to me personally by a friend who has been there with the council meetings. I said, tell me, is the chairman of the council human? He says, no, absolutely not. I already knew the answer, but I was asking him. I said, you saw about the chairman. What is it? Yes. What was the chairman? He says, the Frico, 9 feet tall. So there is your connection outside. And there's a lot of other connections that go on.
Is the Draco part of the reptilian group?
Yes. Basically, he's a reptilian, except he's not a reptilian in terms of, in terms of what is normally considered the Orion group reptilians. The Draconians, as such, come from Draco Major, and they consider themselves the, shall we say, the royalty of the reptilian class. They consider themselves the real.
These are the ones that David Icke is always talking about, the Archons. These are the ones that incarnated to come into our government to run things. And the bottom line is they want to control the Stargates. That's the story that's coming out now. These are the connections.
Well, those are the reptilians.
Okay, so you think that ultimately they have the power?
They and other groups have the powers, and this, of course, is not just limited to Europe. It's not limited to the bankers.
Worldwide.
Today, it's worldwide, and it goes into every major government on Earth. And how it's concealed and covered, of course, is the, shall we say, the agenda for all of the secrecy and the super secrecy in every government on Earth. They don't want the people to know who's in the background and why.
And there must be a reason for that.
There has to be a reason, yes. I'm not going to say I know the reason.
Okay, why don't you hypothesize
that? You hypothesize that they want to take over the planet. They want to cut down the size of the human population, or they want to control the human population because we have achieved a point of technology and mass production that we become quite literally an arsenal, not for democracy, but an arsenal for galactic war. Build the hardware for them to carry on their wars out there. And since, let us say we are an arsenal, probably, and this of course is my conjecture, probably they are providing a certain amount of protection to planet Earth against invasion from outside. Since we've already been invaded, it's a matter of who's controlling us and to what end.
Well, see, my own hypothesis is that a population is easier to control that doesn't know that they are being controlled.
Absolutely correct. And that is the way it's being run today. You have all kinds of mind control techniques. You have all kinds of programs to distract humanity, to distract us with TV and the programs. Put in little bits and pieces here and there on the sci-fi shows referring to aliens to get the idea embedded in the subconscious that, well, maybe there could be aliens. But if anybody comes up and say, are there any aliens? A hardcore statement on, let's say, a news program? Of course not. We've never seen any evidence of this. Ho, ho, ho. Every expert in the field, every political expert will deny it, even if they have seen them.
It's almost so absurd, it's funny.
It is absurd, and it is funny.
Yeah.
Sick funny, I might add.
Well, speaking about funny, we have really gotten off track here, but it's been interesting, and perhaps maybe we can cycle this around back to, we're trying to
at a later point.
Yeah, which was when your memories were starting to come back. We're trying to figure out How was it that you really knew that you had been part of the Philadelphia experiment? We you know, we got to 88.
Well, we can look at it this way. That is the point in 88 of January when my memories came back. Prior to that, I wouldn't say it was not a cold turkey remembrance. It was something I was ready for, because I had already been researching the whole problem of the Philadelphia experiment for at least 20 years prior.
So you always had an interest in it.
I always had an interest in it from the 50s.
Now, did you think that perhaps, and I'm sure other people might state this of you, that you just made all this up in your head?
Well, of course some people have made that statement.
I mean, it's just going to be too easy to do.
I couldn't make up the details and have them corroborated by a dozen or two other people when they were still alive.
So details came back to you that you would have had no way of knowing about.
That's right. Miller's verified it.
And then you had the memory. You probably even wrote some of it down.
Yeah.
Certainly you spoke about it.
Oh, yes.
And then others said, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
And perhaps filled in other details. Is that what happened?
Yeah, well, and there were people who had some of the files in their hands and verified what I remembered.
Oh, so that's even better.
Yes. And, of course, the one specific individual who had the actual files from the Philadelphia experiment in his hands from the Navy was working on Long Island at that time on a special project involving UFOs, and they wanted him to recreate certain hardware that went back to the 40s.
I think we can talk about that. Was that Preston? Because he's going to talk about that.
Right. He asked for prior art. He said, I need to know what was done before if I'm going to recreate certain types of hardware. I need this, this, and this. And then he stuck in, for good measure, I want to see the files in the Philadelphia experiment. Because, in a sense, it was connected. And he said, yes, we'll get them for you. Of course, they kept them under lock and key when he wasn't using them at his desk. And he had them for about 2 weeks. And boy, did he feed me information out of those files. He finally asked the man who gave them to him, who was the, at that time, the either assistant director or the director of the Office of Naval Research, who got them for him. Because it was that high up that he was going.
Did you physically see him, or did he just verbally tell you about it?
He verbally told me about it.
Because there's no way he could have taken that
pattern. No. He asked the man who gave them to him, I says, why can't I see these records? And I can quote the comment that was made by Preston, which was quoting the man who made the comment. He says, quote, Al will never see the records, unquote. This was by the director of the Office of Naval Research, who was personally interfaced with Preston at that time.
Do you remember that gentleman's name?
Not at this point now.
Okay.
It's not the same man now.
I'm sure. This was a while ago. Well, let's maybe move up a little bit. There's some key people who are part of this story that you sort of met. You know, there's Duncan and there's Preston. These are two key people. How did you, here you're still Al Bielek, but how did you go about forming a relationship with these people and then finally saying, you know, I know you from somewhere, and then getting all this additional data that corroborates it?
Well, getting to the point of knowing I know them, like Duncan in specific terms, I knew him from somewhere as early as 1983. This is before any of the memories came back.
So this is even before the 88
incident.
That's correct. Okay, now how did you actually meet Duncan in 83?
I met him in, I didn't meet him in 83. I met Preston in 83. But in 1985, I met Duncan at a conference, the United States Psychotronics Association conference at Dayton, Ohio, at the summer session, and Preston was there. He brought with him his, quote, new lab assistant, unquote, who was helping him with one of the demonstrations.
Were you one of the presidents or the founders of this organization?
I was one of the founders.
You were?
1975, I was at the founding meeting. And he introduced me to Duncan. Looks like a nice guy. And finally, after one of the demonstrations which Preston gave on stage, where Duncan was there as part of it, I said, this guy is extreme sensitive. I want to talk with him. So I got him on that next day over lunch in the cafeteria because we were in a school setting.
Did you feel it? How did you know he's extreme sensitive?
I could feel it. Yes, I am. I mean, one sensitive knows another.
I hear you.
And I got him over lunch and started talking about many things and so forth. And this went on for almost 3 hours after lunch. And about halfway through, maybe 2 hours of this, I said, Duncan, "Have you got a feeling by any chance that you know me from somewhere?" She says, "Yeah." I says, "Do you have any idea where from?" He says, "Not the foggiest. I have no idea where from, but I do know I know you from somewhere." He says, "Well, I got the same feeling, but I have no idea where it's from." Before we left that conference, two things happened. One, I decided that I probably knew Duncan from a prior existence, which, of course, happened to be true. The prior existence at the time didn't gel. It was a Philadelphia experiment as well as others.
See, a lot of people would think that was a past life or something.
It was for Duncan. It was for Duncan, but it wasn't for me.
Well, it kind of was for you, because you were at Cameron then.
That's right.
But Duncan was still Duncan.
Okay, so they're segueing into the Montauk information now. This is a two-hour-long video. It's on YouTube if you're interested in checking it out. I'll post it later also. Thank you for listening tonight. Please stay tuned. I have lots more information coming. I hope you enjoyed that. I'm going to play you out now. Have a wonderful week. We'll talk soon.